How are you?
Here I am. Great. I'm good. Thank you.
I'm delighted to have Fionnuala Flanagan, the wonderful actress, with us this morning on Irish America's The Story. And Fionnuala, just this morning it was announced that you were nominated for a Tony Award. So can you tell us a little bit about that experience and the journey?
Yes. Well, it's for my role in The Ferryman, which is playing on Broadway, and I'll be there in it until June 30th. It's a terrific play by Jez Butterworth. It's got a huge cast, and it moves like the wind. It moves very fast. It's a story set in the north of Ireland in 1981, and it all takes place in a family farmhouse, and it's at the height of the hunger strike, and so it's full of emotion, but you don't have to know anything about the politics to follow the play. So that's what I got nominated for, and the play got nominated, and Jez Butterworth, the writer, and Sam Mendes, the director, and Laura Donnelly, who was in the original London cast when they came here on Broadway, she got nominated for her role and as Best Actress, and Paddy Considine, who also was in the original London cast, he got nominated also. And then we got Rob Howell, who was our designer, got nominated for set design and for costume design, and our soundtrack got nominated. So we got 9 nominations in all, and everybody's very excited about that.
It's absolutely incredible, and I'm thrilled for you. And your nomination is for Best Featured Actress. Can you talk a little bit about your role?
Yeah, which is like it's the same as Best Supporting. My role, I play Aunt Maggie Faraway, who is one of the old aunts in the family, and she drifts in and out. As I said to Jez Butterworth, she's a time traveler. No bother to me to play that. I've done science fiction, so, you know.
That's right. You were in Lost, that incredible series, and also Star Trek, right?
That's right, yes. So she moves in and out between the past and the present, and sometimes the future, because she really is the Sybil of the piece. You know, she can foretell what's going to happen, and is aware of what's going to happen, although she's not aware that she knows that. So it's a tricky, it's probably one of the hardest parts I ever played. But thanks to Sam Mendes, who directed it, he guided me through it and got me through it. So that's it. And she's also very funny.
What was it like working with Sam Mendes?
Well, he's certainly the most inspiring director I've ever worked with. He's, you know, the man has an intelligence that goes to work on something, and a sensibility, and he certainly knows his theater, so that he knows his stagecraft, and he's able to help you and guide you and pull you out of pitfalls. And he has a sense of the whole picture and the whole play. And I mean, it's a huge cast, so, you know, to keep all that in his head and in his brain. And the play moves like the wind. It's actually 3.25 hours long, but it doesn't seem like that. Every audience member that I've spoken to says, oh my gosh, didn't realize how, you know, the time went and I didn't feel it going. So that's always good. Now, he is terrific on timing. You know, he keeps something moving and doesn't let it lag behind. And he's also very good. He protects his actors. He's very kind and loving towards his actors. And that's always lovely in a director. Sometimes, you know, sometimes it's all about their ego, but not with Sam Mendes.
Fionnuala, and in the first act, you're sitting there kind of waiting on the side. I mean, you're on the stage pretty much for the whole thing, for the whole 3 hours and whatever, 20 minutes, or?
Well, not quite. I'm on stage longer than anybody else in the show, but I'm on stage for the entire second act. From when I start to talk, I talk for about 40 minutes at the top of the second act, and then I supposedly go to sleep. And so I'm on stage for the whole second act. And in the first act, it's a good 35, 40 minutes before I actually speak. And then I'm shortly thereafter, I'm wheeled off stage, sitting in my wheelchair, I'm wheeled off stage, and I don't come back until the second act. And so the first act was always the trickiest, the hardest for me, because I'm sitting there staring into the void and traveling through time, and nobody really knows that. And then when I speak, it's a little bit confusing for everyone.
Were you, it's a daunting role, and it's 8 performances a week, and
right.
You haven't been on Broadway in a long time. Did you have any worries about taking on, physically taking on this role and mentally?
Yeah, I mean, this was a very daunting role. It was very difficult to learn, and I learned very fast. But it was, because it's all non-sequiturs, and because it's, what I have to say is rather like a long monologue, so I'm not engaged in dialogue too much with anybody else. And that makes it difficult, because you can't sort of look for hooks in the other person's dialogue, the other person's sentences or whatever. There's nothing there. So it's that was hard. It was very hard to learn. But that was, and then of course I have to sing. I sing 4 songs in the show, and I'm not a singer. So actually, quite honestly, it was torture for me to learn to sing those songs. 2 of them I knew. The song I sing in Irish, I knew already. And I sing that as I'm going off stage. And the other one at the end of Act 2, where I sing a verse from She Moved Through the Fair. Well, I knew that because everybody in Ireland knows that. And I mean, you learn the one I sing in Irish, which is called Trastan Adonta. Every kid in Ireland learns that at school, you know, when you're 8 or 9 years of age. But the first 2 songs that I sing, that was torture, total torture for me to learn those, to learn how to sing them.
Looking at you on the stage, you seem very relaxed up there. And obviously, I mean, your hard work has been rewarded with this Tony nomination. And also, you were nominated for an Outer Critics Circle Award.
Yes, Outer Critics Circle Award. I think the Outer Critics are the newspapers and the press from outside New York, you know, from all around the country. And and I asked somebody, I said, well, they're the outer critics. I said, but don't worry, I know where the inner critics are. They're all in my head. You know, critics. So.
Well, I think any time the critics give you an award, it means that they genuinely appreciate that it's not just talent and it's hard work that you have put into this role, but all your roles. And did this play, in a way, take you back to your role in the movie On the Hunger Strike, Some Mother's Son?
Yes, it did, really, which I think is still a wonderful movie. In fact, I think it's the best film done on the hunger strike ever. It was Terry George's first film, and he and Jim Sheridan wrote it. And I got to play an Irish Republican mother whose son goes on the hunger strike. And it really was a very clever move on their part to locate the story in the families, and Helen Mirren plays the other mother whose son also goes on hunger strike, but he comes off the hunger strike, whereas my son dies and refuses to come off the hunger strike. And it was a period in Irish history, it was a watershed moment in our history, because it split families right down the middle, and not just family from family, but internally in families as people off, as people side with whether the hunger striker should come off the hunger strike or continue until death. So that was a huge, huge thing in the north of Ireland. And they located the story in the mothers, two of the mothers, because they are the people who stood on the line, you know, and held the placards and attracted world attention to the hunger strike and to what was happening inside the Mays prison. So it still holds up as a terrific film. When it opened in the United States, it was just 2 weeks after the IRA had bombed Canary Wharf in London. And so I think the distributors got scared about it. Anyway, they pulled the film and they didn't push it any longer. So, which was a shame because it was a very educational film for anybody who didn't know about the hunger strike. There are many, many people here who don't. It was a good way to teach them about it and show them what was actually going on. So of course the play touches on that too, touches on, you know, the, not only the hunger strikers, all of whom are named in the play, but the ones who died, on hunger strike. But it also shows how a family is split and divided over that particular crisis in history, and it's set in the north of Ireland. The play is actually, it's a true story insofar as it's based on Laura Donnelly's uncle who disappeared, and the play starts with a dead body being found, and then it's what happens as a result of that investigating the family that he comes from. So, and it uncovers all sorts of secrets. So it's based on that reality.
And she's actually the wife of the writer.
Yes, Laura Donnelly is married to Jez Butterworth, and I'm sure that since he's from England and she's from the north of Ireland, I'm sure that she was very helpful with the play and the dialogue in it and the turn of phrase and everything. Absolutely brilliantly written.
Now, over the years, you yourself have been involved in the civil rights movement in Northern Ireland, and you put yourself on the line in terms of the peace process. And did the events of just a couple of weeks ago in Derry, they threw all of us.
Was shocking, absolutely shocking. Yes, shocking. We'll see what the follow up will be. But at the moment, the whole peace process stands in Good Friday Agreement, and the peace agreement in the north stands in danger if depending upon what the British do about their Brexit, and that's one of the things that. One of the reasons I became involved was when the peace process happened, and I helped try and spread the word about that here in this country, in the US, and when Gerry Adams got his visa to come here and speak about it, I introduced him a couple of times, different events, because I thought that it was definitely important to spread the word about the peace process and to try and make it work and try and get as much support for it. And Senator George Mitchell, of course, had been enormously helpful and had gone unspoken in the North and brokered the peace process. Clinton, of course. Clinton had given permission for Gerry Adams to come in and talk about it in this country, because of course the Republican movement had got such a bad rap here. You know, people just thought, oh, Irish Republicans, they throw bombs and they blow people up, without any thought to the fact that without the IRA you would not have had a peace process. You would never have had that.
And Fionnuala, did you have to think about that yourself in terms of your career? I know that you and Helen Mirren received criticism for appearing in Some Mother's Son. so to be in Hollywood and to speak out, or?
Well, I think you know, that's such a long time ago now, if you will. But it was true to say that when the film opened in London, the press was kind of snarled at me going along the, you know, the red carpet. They didn't snarl at Helen because she's their English Rose, as it were. And the role she played in the film, she played the mother of the boy who comes off hunger strike.
Yeah.
And she's opposed to the Republican movement in the film. And the character I played was a woman who's been an Irish Republican for decades, you know, and in her family it's all steeped in Republicanism. So it was, unfortunately, I was perceived as somebody who just favored the Republican movement through the film, and that's not so. I mean, I saw the hunger strike was a dreadful, dreadful, dreadful thing, and should never have happened. And of course, we feature it in the play, and it's very effective because I think it does educate people a little bit more.
So let's turn a little to your earlier career, because you were known as a stage actress in the beginning, and then over the years you've appeared in all of these wonderful movies. I'll always stop and watch Waking Ned Divine if it comes on. and I know that you were you had such a great role in Lost, and Going and in the Guard, and Sisterhood, is that what it's called?
Oh, the Divine Secret of the Yaya Sisterhood.
Yeah.
Well, they were all, yes. I mean, so far it's been good. You know, I've been fortunate to work with Tali Khoury, you know, who directed the Yaya Sisterhood, and which was great fun to do. And she's a wonderful director and a wonderful writer. She wrote Thelma and Louise, you know, but at the time they wouldn't let her direct it. So she had to wait quite a long time before she got to direct something. So much for the last feeling in Hollywood. And, but the other things, Guard was great to do. I mean, I love John, and his work is wonderful, and, such a talented man, and we laughed a lot on that, even though it poured with rain most of the time. And Brendan, who's so talented, Brendan Gleeson, very talented man. So I've been very fortunate in Lost. I mean, I still don't know what Lost is about. You know, I've no idea. And people have asked me, they say, what was it really about? And then the faintest idea, you know, and then, occasionally after that, because of the way it ended, and I was in the last episode, because of the way it ended, people would attack me in the street, and as though I was responsible for writing it. And I'd say, no, that, I would never have chosen that. That's not my choice. And I didn't write it anyway. But people were very riled up about it. And did you know that it was the most watched TV show, probably isn't any longer, but it was the most watched TV show in China.
I didn't know that. But I feel like I want to go home and stream it all again. Because it was an incredible series, and it was way ahead of its time.
It was indeed. So maybe the Chinese understood it. I certainly didn't. And I remember saying to the director, when he sent me the script, and I said, well, you know, I've never seen the show, and I think I didn't come in until the fourth year, and I've never seen the show, could you send me a few DVDs so I'll be able to see what it's about? He said, oh, don't bother, he said, if you haven't seen it from the beginning, you won't understand anything. I said, well, how on earth do you expect me to play the part? He said, oh, it's very easy. He said, this is the only character in the whole show who knows the past and the future. I said, well, I can play that just after my kids, you know. And when you say to your kids, you know, do you know what's going to happen to you if you don't do your homework? In your best all-seeing parental voice.
But let's start, let's go back a little. So you grew up in Dublin, and you were you spoke English and Irish at home, in your home, or you went to an Irish school?
Yeah, we spoke English at home, and we spoke Irish all day long at school. Mm-hmm.
So this, it's no bother you to sing a song in Irish and this latest...
No, that was no bother. It was just the actual singing that was a bother. It wasn't the Irish.
So you, what about your first stage appearance? How old were you?
Oh, Lord. First professional stage appearance.
Was it before the Abbey? Or?
No, I was in the Abbey School. But I didn't appear on the Abbey stage for ages. In fact, it was on the Peacock stage that I first appeared, but that was for the Yeats Festival. I did the Countess Kathleen, but that's much more recent, if you will. That was in the 80s. I started writing little plays when I was 5 or 6 and forcing my brothers and sisters and my little friends to be in them. And, you know, they all took place in the kitchen, in our kitchen, and the audience was my mother. And so we had some costumes left over from a costume party, and those costumes were used for everything. And all the plays had to have a monster in them, and my brother wouldn't be in it unless he could play the monster. So, and the sofa was his island. So you can imagine, and we had umbrellas then, so there always had to be a song with umbrellas in it.
And did you come from a theatrical family, or were your parents just very indulgent?
No, not at all. Well, my mother had been part of a musical theater group when she was young, when she was working in the civil service. And my father was, for want of a better word, a boulevardier. I mean, he was a great storyteller, but he wasn't. And he had taken part in one of the first films ever made in Ireland by an Irish company, and I've never been able to see a print of it. And it was called This Green Ireland, and he played, they shot it all out around Hope Castle. And I have photographs, stills from it, but he played a body snatcher. So... and he was very proud of that. So I have some of those photographs at home.
And what was his day job?
What was his day job? I don't think he had a day job then. He was that was actually early on, because he went to Spain to fight in the Spanish Civil War. He went in 1937 with many Irish men and women who went with Frank Ryan to fight against Franco, to defend the Spanish Republic. And he went, and the making of this movie was easily a year or so before that, because two of the men who were in one of the photographs that I have were killed in Spain with him. My father survived the Spanish Civil War, but his family, who were totally not in favor of him going to fight against Franco, because they were very Catholic and they wanted to defend Franco, and they thought he was a lovely man, and that's a quote, a lovely man, that lovely man Franco, they'd say. And off my father went to fight against Franco. And of course, when they came back, the Irish men who survived, they were all excommunicated and bred out from the pulpit. And it was very difficult for them to get work, because, as you know, in the 30s and 40s, Ireland was totally in the grip of the Catholic Church, and they dictated most of what everything, of how everything happened. Well, my father got wounded, and it was announced by BBC Radio that he was missing, believed dead, when he was wounded. And so his family, being a devout Catholic family, they rushed out and spent the little money they had on black clothes and black hats and whatever. And then 6 weeks later, much to their annoyance, he turned up alive. And so they were furious about that, because he didn't have the decency to go and die, you know.
That sounds like a movie. But so your very first movie role was in Ulysses, right?
No, it was in a movie that John Huston made called The Story of Sinful Davy, which was all based on the diary of a Scottish highwayman. And that was the first movie I was in. It was sort of a romp, you know.
Uh-huh.
And, it was filmed in Ireland. And a critic said about it, this movie could not have been released. It must have escaped.
Oh.
So that'll tell you how bad it was.
And did you go on to play Gertie McDowell in the 1967 film of Ulysses?
Yes, I did. Joe Strick's Ulysses, yes, I did. I played Gertie in that. And that was interesting, because that holds up, really. I've seen it on television late at night. It does hold up as a movie. He was planning to make a trilogy at the time, but it didn't turn out. The distributors or the people who were giving him the money just wouldn't go along with that. So he squished it all into one movie.
So it seems like you've always had this interest in James Joyce then, especially in the female characters. And you went on to play Molly Bloom in the 1973 version of
That's right,
Nighttown.
Which was directed by Burgess Meredith, the great Burgess Meredith, and I played opposite Zero Mostel, who was playing Bloom, and he was a wonderful Bloom, really wonderful. So we did that here at the Winter Garden Theater in New York, and that garnered me a lot of attention. And then I reprised that character when I did my own stage production and subsequent film called James Joyce's Women, where I played six women from the life and work of Joyce. And goodness me, yes.
And almost every year you've come in to a symphony space for years, anyway, most years.
For years I did. I'd come in every second year, actually, when I was available to read the whole Molly Bloom soliloquy, which takes 2 hours and 50 minutes to read. And I would do that late at night when Isaiah Sheffer, bless his heart, was alive at the time. And Isaiah was a good friend, and he would ask me to come in, and they would have all-day readings or all-evening readings from Joyce. And then I would come in at the end around 10 o'clock or so and read the Molly Bloom soliloquy, which is, of course, the end of Ulysses. And I did that. And I did it, and then when Isaiah died, it didn't seem so much fun anymore. And although I did it the year after he died, but I haven't been back to do it. Oh, I was back to do it since when they wanted to do just an hour, and I found that unsatisfactory, because it's like, how do you break up a symphony, you know? So I think that one should just do the whole thing.
So your first Broadway appearance, was in Lovers, right?
It was in Lovers, yes, 1968 in Lovers, which is a Brian Friel play, and I had originated the role of the schoolgirl in at the Gate in Dublin, where it was directed by Edwards, and then Morty Gottlieb, who was a lifetime wonderful New York producer, he invited three of us to come over from the original cast. And we did, and we opened at the Vivian Beaumont Theatre, and then we moved then to the Music Box on Broadway. So that was 1958, and then I toured with it, which was 69, and then toured with it, which was an incredible experience, an incredible way to see this country, because, you know, the Vietnam War was on, the peace movement was in full swing, there were flower children in San Francisco, the entire country was divided about the Vietnam War. So it was a thrilling and adventurous time to be here. And even though I still don't understand American politics, I learned a great deal about it. And I found that the heartland of America, the people who are out there in middle, what's called middle America, were so welcoming to us. People would invite us to their homes for tea or for lunch, you know, just because they came to see the show and they liked it so much. And, I mean, they speak about Irish hospitality, but the hospitality that I was greeted with here, and particularly in the heartland of America, was incredible, wonderful.
And, Fionnuala, did you decide to stay in America after that tour? Or I know that you met Garrett, your husband, who would become your husband on that tour, right? Garrett O'Connor?
Yes. I met Garrett O'Connor when I was on tour, met him in Baltimore. He was on the faculty at Johns Hopkins, and we were playing the Morris Mechanic Theater in Baltimore. And the actor who had come with me, we were all staying at the Round Towner Motel, which has since been torn down, I understand, though I think they should have put up a plaque. But anyway, it's gone. And so I hear all this raucous laughter from outside my bedroom, and I open the door onto the corridor, and Eamon Morrissey, who had come over from Ireland with me, he was playing opposite me, is leaning up against the wall, laughing his head off, and kneeling on the floor in front of him, telling a very funny story, was a very handsome man, and that was Garrett. And that's how we met. And there you are.
How many years together?
44 years together, 42 married, 2 years, you know, trying to make up our minds. But, 42 years of marriage. And then he died 3 years ago. It'll be 4 years in September. And I miss him very much. And he would have loved the ferryman, you know. There's so many things he would have loved.
Yeah, I'm sure it's a huge adjustment, and I loved your husband. I mean, I just found him a fascinating man who was always very generous with his time, and also with the magazine, his piece that he wrote on the Irish and alcohol is probably the most Googled article that we have on our website.
Really, that's good to hear. He was a great loss to the whole medical profession, particularly to do with alcoholism and drug addiction, because he knew about that. He understood it. He got sober himself and would have been 42 years sober when he died. So that was an amazing, he would share his own story, and that's what made him open to people who wanted to get well. And his great gift was, for instance, when he saw a new patient, the interview could go on for 5 or 6 hours. He would not quit until he found common ground, until he found that, and they talk about everything, football, horse racing, fishing, you know, movies, whatever. And he would stay with it until he found common ground. And then he found a way in with the person. And oftentimes he would send people who, not only did they say they weren't sick, but they didn't want to get well. You know, they would cling to their beliefs that there was nothing wrong with them. So, I mean, he saved myriad lives and myriad families. And so he's a great loss indeed to the profession.
And it must have been a huge adjustment for you. It does seem, though, that you kind of threw yourself into work and went and did some independent films, and I know,
well,
that,
you know,
you just were, I think it was a month later, you appeared at the Irish Post Awards in London.
Right,
you know,
I did.
Just, you've always done so much to support the Irish community, be it in London or here in America with us and the magazine. Back in the day when we were starting out and we really needed a star, you would just, you know, come for us. And I just, anyway,
Oh, well, it's always been my pleasure to be invited by you, to be included in your, among your friends, and everything you're doing has always been a great pleasure for me. I tell you, as far as, yes, London, I remember that. It was just a month after he died that I showed up for the Irish Coast Awards, and Elgin had invited me, and I didn't, you know, they were giving me a Lifetime Achievement Award, and it was too late to bow out, you know. And but also, I'll tell you, work has always saved me. 3 months after Garrett died, when I was totally grief-stricken, didn't know what to do, and I got a call from the BBC, would I do a series, a limited series, which was going to be shot in Ireland, and I said yes immediately. And work has saved me in so many ways. I'm so grateful, very grateful that I got that call. Little do they know I would have paid them, you know, but I didn't have to. They paid me to do the job, and did this series, which was only on the air for one season, and then did not come back. But even that, it was wonderful to do. So I'm grateful that the people think of me for events, and for that you think of me for things. You're always inviting me to the wonderful luncheons you give, and to Irish events around the city, and I'm so grateful for that, Patricia.
Well, I'm always grateful to you, Fionnuala. You make us look good. Any advice for young people starting out in the business?
I really never give advice.
Have a passion for it.
Listen, you know, there's no point in telling someone what to do, because if you want to be an actor, you want to be an actor or a dancer or a singer or whatever, and you really want it badly enough, nobody will dissuade you, you know. Nothing will stand in your way. You'll wait tables like I did. You'll scrub floors. You'll do anything. You'll babysit. You'll do all those jobs in order to keep a roof over your head, so that you can pursue the art form that you've chosen. And I've never met an actor or an actress or a painter or a dancer who didn't have that ethos. And it's a good one to have. It's a very good one to have.
Well, Fionnuala, listen, thank you so much once again on this very special day, taking the time out to talk to Irish America. I think your last nomination was for Ulysses in Nighttown.
That's right, yes. For Ulysses in Nighttown, yes.
So we're just thrilled to have you back, and it's incredible to see you on stage. I'm such a fan of your movies, but it's apart from
seeing you
and do Molly Bloom's soliloquy, it's just so wonderful to see you in a play. And so you're going to stay with the cast. You're one of the few who stayed on with the...
Two other actors stayed as well. They have smaller roles, but they stayed, and that's good. And, I stayed on. Sam Mendes had invited me to join the play for the Broadway run. So that's when I was with it from whatever. We rehearsed in London in August, September, and then came here, and we opened in October last year. So it just so happened that I'm still here, I'm still with it, and will be until the 30th of June. And it's great. It's just great. It's tough, and I'll be glad to have a rest afterwards, but it's a terrific show. It's an epic.
And I hope to see you again on the Broadway stage in the years to come.
Thank you, Patricia.
And thank you very much, Fionnuala, for joining us today. And we'll see you around town.
Indeed you will.
Thank you.